Hi, everybody. My name is Brenda Watson. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm very excited to be here. Thank you, Cynthia, for asking me to do this. And am I speaking it? They told me to eat the microphone, so I can start eating it now. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me back there? I've never been accused of being silent, so let me know if I'm too quiet for you. But anyway, thank you for inviting me to be here. I really appreciate it. And thank you to my daughter. I came to drop her off to college, and it just coincided with being here. I was here last week to hear John, and I think it is you, right? And what a fabulous talk. And I've come to New York almost every fall, and I've managed to always come not on a Tuesday. I've always come on a weekend. I go to a women's conference upstate New York, an A and Al-Anon women's conference. If there are any Al-Anons in the house, welcome. It is a family disease, and we're glad you're here. But I've never been able to come to the Atlantic Group. I've heard about you for many, 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 many years. And congratulations. You are definitely a program of attraction, which is what has kept me in Alcoholics Anonymous all this time. And let me start with a few things. You know, my sobriety date is December 14th of 1986, and I absolutely had no intention of getting sober, of staying sober, and of being here this long and being so in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I stand here in front of you by the grace of God. Totally by the grace of God, and by the fact that I was willing to accept that I was absolutely powerless over alcohol, and that my life was completely unmanageable. I took my very first step on my knees in front of that toilet bowl, begging God to stop the madness, to stop the demons in my head, to stop the insanity. Begging God to please do it this time, because I had begged him so many times to ask him to please help me. And of course, you know, I had begged, but I hadn't taken the actions. And if you're new, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I heard there was somebody here with one day. You know, I was sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous by the Santa Monica courts. A judge sentenced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. A judge told me that I couldn't drink and drive. You know, a judge told me that I had to go to 6 AA meetings. And I raised my hand and I asked the judge, "But Your Honor, I'm not an alcoholic." And the lawyer told me if I didn't shut up, he was going to give me 30 meetings. And so I quickly quieted down. But let me tell you a little bit about my story. You know, the disease of alcoholism is a disease of perception. And the longer I'm sober, the longer I'm in recovery, the better my perception gets about what happened in my childhood. I'm sure it happens to a few of you. And, you know, I used to say that I was raised by wolves. This was what I used to say, like, when I was 5 years sober. And there's some truth to that. There is some truth to that. But, you know, I spend a lot of time today with the people that raised me. I take care of my grandmother, who I used to call her Hitler's sister. In my early sobriety. And now I take care of her. She's 92 years old, and I take care of her. And I see, my God, this woman taught me so many incredible values and so many important things in life. What an amazing woman. And so it's interesting to me that, you know, my perception when I was newer was poor me, they did it to me, and poor me another drink, you know. So my sobriety date, you know, December 14th of 1986, and I crawled to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a party girl, and I'm not going to talk a lot about, and I hate to say this because whenever I say this, it's like a kiss of death, but I'm not going to talk a lot about my drinking career. I can assure you I didn't tap dance from the prom. I didn't even go to my prom because I was too busy drinking. But for the new people, my very first drunk was when I was about 14. And all I remember was we were a group of kids. You know, I don't know. I come from Guatemala, Central America. So if you hear a little bit of an accent, it is true. I am a foreigner. And legal, by the grace of God, today. U.S. citizen. Didn't used to be all the time. Didn't stop me from running to the border to TJ when we were partying, you know, the fact that I wasn't legal. So, and you do tape this, so I hope you don't turn it over to the IRS. I mean, INS or whatever it is. IRS too, I'm sure. Anyway, there was a group of us, and all I can remember from this from that moment is that there was a bottle of Bacardi across from me, a big, tall bottle of Bacardi, and they were passing it around, and the thought I had is a thought that will come to live in me every day of my life for the next 10 years, which was my drinking career. And the thought was, by the time that bottle gets to me, there's not going to be enough. And I tell you, that was a feeling that I absolutely dreaded, is the feeling of not having enough alcohol. Because that drink, that bottle of Bacardi that night, made me feel powerful. It took away at all my demons. It took away at all the fear that terrorized me when I was a child. Some of the demons that lived in my head were true for me. Some of those monsters were true for me, the monsters in my childhood. And I couldn't live with that insanity in my head. Yeah, it was a non-stop talking. You know, and to this day, it's better. It is better, but I've never been able to get rid of the rhetoric. You know, it is just rhetoric. It is just telling me my disease is so powerful that it tells me on a daily basis, the first thing when I open my eyes, it tells me how useless I am and how worthless I am. And then immediately, therefore, I ask God to remove those thoughts. I get on my knees. I thank God, and I ask him to make me be useful for that day. And that's how I get out of my head. But in the beginning of my drinking, you know, I lived in my head. That's all. Everything revolved around my head. And fantasy, absolute fantasy. I love fairy tales. I love to read books. And to take me away from the place that I live, because I didn't like to live in my own skin, and I didn't know that. I had no idea that I didn't know how to live in my own skin. You know, and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I stand here in front of you because I've taken the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a dignified woman, and I'm fully dressed, which is a plus. My daughter's only heard my story like twice, so I have to. And she says, Mom, don't say that because you'll edit your talk. And I tell you one thing. I get on my knees and I say the third step prayer, and then it is God's show. So thank you for being in this show with me. We'll see what comes up, you know. Anyway, I came to the United States in 1976. My mother brought us here, and I landed in a wonderful place for a budding alcoholic like me. I landed in Hollyweird. You know, I landed in Santa Monica and Vine, and I walked into this club, and I don't know about you, but this club was full of mirrors, you know, and I don't know about you, but I love mirrors. It was the disco era, and I would love to walk in with those flurry dresses, and I knew, I was a true disco queen, by the way. I live in West Hollywood today, so, you know, some people are trying to be queens, but they're not as a disco queen like I was. So we usually have a debate about that. And anyway, I landed in this place, and it was a wonderful time. You know, I'm a party girl. My main name is La Infiesta, for those people who speak Spanish. It translates to the in party. And my whole entire life was a party. That's what I live for. You know, it's interesting because I remember the beginning of those days, thinking like every day was planned around what we were going to do that night, what party we were going to go to, how many drinks we were going to have, what stash we were going to have, because there's nothing more dreadful for an alcoholic to hear last call, you know. For me, it was like terrifying to hear that phrase and not have a stash someplace, you know. Just the knowing that there was a stash someplace gave me such a sense of comfort, a sense of ease, you know, not even taking that drink. But anyway, I did a lot of partying in West Hollywood. We ran around the alleys of Hollywood, and we had a lot of fun. I mean, I can't tell you that I actually had a really bad time in the mornings when I wasn't drinking. And I hadn't discovered the morning drink, you know. Now, mind you, I didn't get up until 2 in the afternoon most days. And I would start drinking at 4 in the afternoon. But I loved the effect produced by alcohol. I could walk into a room like this. You know, a room like this terrified me because I always felt less than you. I felt like you knew that I was stupid. I felt like you were looking at me and that you knew all my secrets. And what a miracle that what that drink would do. And I never had one. I'm not a person that has one drink. You know, I don't see the purpose of that whatsoever. My therapist told me to try not to drink for 2 weeks, you know. I had a therapist because every good Angelino has a therapist. I imagine some New York people too. And she said, don't drink for 2 weeks. And I said, okay, you know, like nothing. And after those 2 weeks, you know, I had to come back and say, well, it was my friend's going away party and we had to, you know, I always had an excuse, always had an excuse. But the moment came, you know, the weekend that I got sober, you know, we were drinking another one of my favorite. And I forgot to tell you that when I went to Hollywood, I went across the street to this liquor store and I found magic in a tall can of English 800, you know, and it was magic. I love English 800. It was a tall can of beer, very bitter, but it did the job, you know, and of course we didn't drink one. And we had a great time. You know, a really good time. I was the only person driving a car. And so people would say, they would get a great idea and say, oh, let's go to TJ tonight. You know, Tijuana, which is Mexico, about 4.5 hours from Los Angeles. And we would drive and we would go party over there. And then we would try to cross the border. And I told you, I wasn't legal at the time. And I could have been sent back, you know, but I wasn't, luckily. Anyway, 1986, the beginning of 1986, I was zigzagging on the Santa Monica Freeway, and the Santa Monica Highway Police didn't think it was so cute that I was driving with no lights, and it didn't help that my friend stopped his car in front of me, and he got out of the car and screamed at the officer and said, oh, officer, be careful, she's really drunk. So they didn't have to give me a sobriety test. He just threw me in the back of the car, and then he took me in front of a judge the next morning. I spent the night in this lovely little jail, you know, by myself, and the next morning it was quite busy, a lot of people in there. And you know, several years ago, they were going to change the law where judges could not sentence people to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sent that judge a letter, and I told them that I would have never found out about Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have never found out that my problem was called a disease of alcoholism had he not sentenced me to AA. And, you know, I don't know if he read it. I don't know. And I certainly hope that they still sentence people. Because when I walked into that meeting, you know, I didn't fall in love with you people. You dressed poorly, not this crowd, of course, but the crowd that I walked into. I walked into the Solano Club in the West Side at noon because I told you I didn't get up early. So I walked in at noon, and, you know, everybody looked like they were ex-convicts. They didn't have a job. They didn't have a nice car. And I had all those things. I lived on the beach. I lived in front of the beach in Venice, another great place for an alcoholic like me. And I had a job. I always had a job. I had 2 jobs, as a matter of fact. It's amazing what we can do when we drink. You know, now I don't even have a job. You know, I used to have 2 to 3 jobs a day, you know, and get up and sometimes not even get up. You know, use some accessories to stay up all night and then just go to work the next day, you know. And it was amazing. And anyway, I walked in and I didn't like you people. You know, I read the steps and I read the traditions and I said, good for you. You know, you actually look like you need a drink. You were angry. You were pissed off, or what it seemed to be like to me, you know. And alcohol was still working for me. And then what happened is I did what was on chapter 3, you know, of that beautiful big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new, I urge you to read that book. I go on a book study every year, a whole weekend of book study, because I'm, you know, I want to remain teachable. I never want to let my ego get in the way of thinking that I know it all. I never want to do that. I want to remain teachable. So I go on a book study every year. And that the doctor's opinion by far is one of my favorite parts of the big book. And if you're new, read that. You'll find yourself in there. And you'll find yourself in the big book, as I did. They told me I needed a sponsor. And I had been interviewing for a few days. I mean, after I did all this crazy stuff with Chapter 3, you know, switching drinks and going to the gym and doing all this stuff, getting organic and, you know, all this stuff, vegetarian, all these things, I realized one weekend that we were drinking tequila, which is my other favorite drink, to kill you. That will put you in a state of absolute hallucination. I love it. Drinking from the bottle. And this weekend I could not stop drinking, you know, and I was vomiting bile and I was vomiting blood. And I really meant to not drink that day, and I just couldn't. And I kept going. And so the next day, you know, I walked into my therapist's office and I said, I'm going to AA. I'm going to that meeting, because I thought that was the only meeting. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I walked in, and this guy said, why don't you get up to the podium, raise your hand, and say that you're an alcoholic. And the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous happened, which was I did something somebody else suggested. Against my better judgment, I did it. And I got up to the podium, and I raised my hand, and I said, my name is Brenda, and I'm an alcoholic, and I need help. And this guy came running after me, and I thought he wanted to sleep with me, because why else would he want my phone number? But this guy actually took me to hundreds. I mean, they said to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, but this guy made it his mission. He was only sober like 2 months more than I was. His name is Mark, and I always say his name because I've never seen Mark since. And I don't know if he's sober. His wife died of a cocaine overdose. And Mark took me to, he showed me how fabulous Alcoholics Anonymous is, that there was 3,000 meetings in the Los Angeles area, that there was midnight meetings, there's morning meetings, there's noon meetings, there's this meeting, that meeting. And then he told me that I needed to get a sponsor. And I told you I was interviewing, but this, you know, this people that were not my type. And it's terrible to be arrogant in Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't it? And I went to this group, you know. I had met somebody in drunk driving school, and they had given me a meeting directory. They were going to teach me how to drink and drive. And I hated Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to go to these classes and tell them how much I hated Alcoholics Anonymous. And to be standing here in front of you and to love Alcoholics Anonymous like I love Alcoholics Anonymous, because I love it with all my heart, because it not only saves my life, but he gave me the opportunity to be an amazing mother to three incredible children. And a woman of my type should not be allowed to be given that gift. So anyway, I got lost there a little bit. I walked into this group. I looked at the meeting directory, and I told this guy that I needed a sponsor. And he said, well, what are you looking for, a sponsor? And I don't know why I said this. I mean, I was making a pact with the devil at the moment. And I said, somebody that can see right through me. And sure enough, I found her. She found me. She was a big woman, big Mexican woman. Her name was Rachel Lara. And let me tell you, Rachel Lara taught me everything I know about how to stay sober in 3 months. Everything. She told me to get to the meetings an hour before the meeting starts. And if you're new, I urge you to look in the front, because this is what I was told. They told me the winners sit in the front. They told me, do you want to be a loser or do you want to be a winner? Get there early. Get there an hour before the meeting starts. Get a commitment. You know, at that meeting that I told you that I didn't like people, they gave me the cookie commitment, the coffee commitment, the literature commitment, the secretary commitment. And I thought, wow, what were these people doing before I got here? Little did I know that they were saving my life. Little did I know that they were saving my life. So I went to this group, and it was about 400 people in Santa Monica. You've heard about that group. And they all looked tan. They were playing. They had played volleyball. They had, you know, they were looking good. They looked young. And I got a sponsor, and she told me to call her at 7:30 the next morning. And you know that I hadn't gotten up at 7:30 in the morning in a long time. So I called her at 11 in the morning. And she hung up on me several times until I got it. And then I set my alarm to call at 7:30 in the morning. And she told me to get commitments and to go to a meeting every day. And I tell you, if you're new, I went to 3 to 4 meetings a day. What level of desperation do you have? I was absolutely desperate. And I had no idea that this could be a revolving door. Not for me, I didn't think. And my sponsor used to say every time I debated anything, she used to say, "Do you want to get drunk?" And I would say, you know, I was terrified of getting drunk. Terrified. I had no idea that you could go and drink and come back. And if you come back, we welcome you. And be proud that you walked in, because it is very difficult. I've lost many, many friends to this horrible disease with 19, 20 years of sobriety. One of my own sponsees was in a coma 3 years ago with 28 years of sobriety because he decided that inhalants were not affecting his from the neck up. And he went out and swallowed his tongue. You know, and he's sober today by the grace of God with 3 years. So if you're coming back, welcome. We want you here as well. Anyway, my sponsor taught me a lot of things, got me into the big book, got me into the steps. And then she told me something that you should never tell an alcoholic, which is don't get into a relationship in your first year. I told you I met this guy in drunk driving school because I pick him well. I pick him really well. And what made him more attractive is he had another newcomer pregnant when I came into the group. And so we proceeded to get engaged rapidly, you know. He was an old-timer to me. He was 6 months sober. I was a month sober, you know. And so we got engaged. And, you know, the three of us, the woman that was pregnant and my husband and I just grew together in the rooms. I mean, you know, sometimes in your first year, you walk into a room and you think they're talking about you. Well, this time they were talking about us, and it made for a very spicy year. But you know, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is that, well, we didn't get married right away because my husband went to get a marriage license, and he came back, and he was really pale, and he's very white, and he looked translucent, and he said, "Oh, honey, we can't get married." And I said, "Well, why, honey?" He goes, "Because apparently you already are." And apparently, in my drunken stupor, I had married my best friend's best friend so they wouldn't deport him. And so I had to get unmarried and look, you know, look for the guy first. Like, it took me 3 years, which was God's grace, because he gave my husband and I an opportunity to work the steps and think about this, you know, think about what we were about to do. And you know, and then this beautiful red-haired boy with blue eyes came into my life. He was a year and a half when he came into my life, you know, and his mother never drew another sober breath, you know. And yet I was given the grace of God to walk into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and sit among you and raise this little boy. And I had the pleasure, I just came back this weekend from Newport, from watching him get married. And that doesn't happen. It only happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was able to sit next to this woman over the weekend and hold her arm and tell her what a great job she's done with him. And that doesn't happen. That's not my kind of thinking, you know. And I told you I was given the opportunity to have these two beautiful children who are the light of my life. No, and I, like I said, a woman like of my type should not be giving that gift. And I learned everything in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, how wonderful that you're in a group that is active, you know, because that's what's going to carry you. You know, we did a lot of things. We did sober dances. We did camping. We did skiing. I didn't even know how to swim, and I water skied, you know. And that's the kind of things we did, you know, and it was a wonderful life. And we went to conventions, and we were in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous, for me, is a way of life. It is the number one thing. If I'm not sober, I am nothing. And I love working with a newcomer. And I love going through the big book with a newcomer. And I love watching their eyes open up. And I have to tell you that every dream I ever had, every dream has come true for me. And some of them I wish they hadn't, you know. You know, and last week I was listening to John, you know, and he talked about, you know, it is great to make amends for the wreck of the past because you can excuse it in your poor behavior, you know, because you were drunk. But man, it is tough to restitute the present, to be accountable, to be in 10, 11, and 12, you know, as our speakers talked about. You know, it is tough. It is tough to say, you know, I was wrong for behaving that way. You know, and I'm human. I behave badly sometimes. I know you don't believe that, but I do. What happens to me is I was 10 years sober, and I heard the call of the wild. I see a few of you have heard it before. Uh-huh. And, you know, my life was perfect. My children were wonderful. They were perfect, and I was dedicated to them. And, you know, going to AA, Mr. and Mrs. AA, and everything was just perfect. And I could not wait to screw it up. I just could not wait. And I did it, you know. And it took me almost 10 years to repair that, you know. And I had to do a lot of hard work in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for that because, you know what? I don't regret the past. I don't regret anything that I've ever done. Nothing. Because I get to pass it on to other people. And I get to hug you. And I get to tell you it's going to be okay. Because it was okay for me. You know, when you want to die and you're cold stone sober. When you want to kill yourself. Because you have managed to destroy everything beautiful in your life. You know, and yet what I've learned is that what I want to kill is self, is ego, is the disease of alcoholism. That's what I want to kill. And the only solution for me is in the steps. So I dive into the steps again. And that's what I do. You know, at 23 years married, my husband decided that he was going to take a different spiritual path. You know, and I was devastated by that. Devastated, like John talked about. That hurt, that pain is so deep, you think you're not going to be able to walk. You think you're not be able to show up. But I'm here to tell you that you can, that everything passes and that God doesn't move out of your heart. God lives in our hearts. God is within me, you know, as long as I remain sober and I help another alcoholic. You can get through it. You know, and I've gotten through many things. You know, my youngest sister was murdered when I was a year and a half sober in a terrible situation, a gang by shooting where she shouldn't be. You know, and my whole family was devastated. And, you know, I remember hearing the wailing of my mother and the drinking that went on because drinking kills the pain. You know, and my mother's sober by the grace of God today. But I remember in those days that, you know, alcohol was looking like a very good solution to kill that kind of pain. You know, and my brother, and I ask you people, when you say your prayer at the end of the meeting to pray for those that are still suffering, there are people suffering, a lot of people, my brother included. The guilt that is going to kill him, the guilt is going to kill him because he got into a fight with my sister 2 weeks before she died. You know, I was current with my sister. I'm current with everybody. You know, I made amends to people that hurt me deeply when I was a little girl. And I made amends because I didn't want to live with that hatred no longer in my life. You know, that's why I made amends. Not because I'm some fabulous person. I do it out of selfish reasons, believe me. I work the steps out of selfish reasons. Anyway, my time is up. And I just want to say, if you're new, grab on to this next person. Come and talk to the old timers. The old timers are some of the most important people here that can give you their wisdom. And, you know, I'm going to end with my sponsor used to read from a pamphlet called A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you don't have it on your literature table, so tell them to get it. And it goes something like this, because I did smoke some stuff, so my brain is not fully there. But it goes something like this, that from the cradle to the grave, every human being is looking for at least one other human being that they can stand in front of and strip themselves naked from any defense or pretense. And that moment can begin for you at this very AA meeting. Thank you for letting me share.